winner is.
The winner is.
The winner is.
What's it like to send your luggage?
Sometimes. That means sometimes.
There can be 100 people in a room. Maybe there is right now.
I know it's tuna, but it says chicken.
I don't know her.
She always has these long lists of like diva demands.
Cheetos and Doritos.
Great gowns, beautiful gowns.
I understand you embrace the term diva.
Yes. Hello, divas, and welcome back to another fabulous episode of Diva Daily's podcast. I am your host, Steffi, and this is a podcast where we deconstruct divas on film and TV. So before we begin, I just want to say I hope you guys are healthy and safe and doing what you need to do in light of this weird, crazy time that we're all experiencing right now. Right off the top, too, I just wanted to say if you're interested in following the podcast, you can find us on social media. We're at Diva Daily's Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And we also have an answering machine where you can leave us your thoughts about any particular episode, a diva, a movie, what have you. So the number to call is 714-729-3121. And of course, if you have any additional questions, you can always email the podcast, divadailiespod@gmail.com. But what better way to social distance than with a new Diva Dailies podcast? So the episode you're about to listen to is part two of the conversation that Angie and I left off on. If you guys haven't listened to part one, I highly suggest you do. I'm so happy that a lot of you, especially who don't really know Whitney Houston that well, got a lot from it. Like a lot of you DM'd me and said, wow, I didn't know that this was even a thing. I didn't even know who Robin Crawford was and whatnot. So I'm just really happy that aside from hopefully pleasing the Whitney fans and this being a good episode for Whitney, I'm happy that for the people who aren't really familiar with Whitney, you guys are learning a lot too. So that's just really amazing to hear. But yeah, this is part two of that conversation. We're going to continue talking about Robin Crawford's book, A Song for You, My Life with Whitney Houston. There's lots of excerpts from the book in this particular episode. And additionally, aside from getting more into the book, Angie and I also talk a lot about Whitney's music. We talk about why we love her as a live vocalist, and we talk about our favorite album, which just so happens to be the same. So, yeah, I hope you guys enjoy this episode. So here we go.
We got a lot of honesty from Whitney Houston in a way that we hadn't gotten before.
Right.
You know, like you said before, you know, she's media trained to a certain extent. Except when it came to the gay questions.
Oh my God. Ooh, the way she handled those questions. Yikes.
Man. Oh.
Oh my goodness.
Broke my heart. Like going back to them now, I'm just like, you did it. You said what?
Whitney added, people see Robin with me and they draw their own conclusions. Anyway, whose business is it if you're gay or like dogs?
I feel like she honestly didn't understand what she was saying.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think she was even meaning to be like homophobic in any way. Like, I just feel like she was just talking whatever.
I think she was trying so hard. Well, what I see, because I identify as queer. So I see my 13-year-old self trying hard to make everybody believe that I'm not queer. And that's what I see in Whitney. In those interviews, like she's trying so hard.
Not too long ago, I was in Detroit. I did a radio show for over an hour. About 30 calls came in. They really just wanted to know, well, what is the story of Whitney? Is she gay or is she not?
Whitney is not gay. That is a story on that. The only gayness I feel is when I'm happy, honey. That's it.
That's all that really matters.
That's all that matters. Yes.
Feeding into the madness is the nonstop speculation about Whitney's relationship with her female executive assistant and best friend for 17 years.
This wasn't her world. I mean, I brought her into this madness. She goes, "What? Why am I the target? What did I do?" I said, "You're my friend. What else you want? You play basketball. They think you're a man. I don't know. She's a damn good basketball player. She can beat any guy there is. I love it."
Because she plays basketball, people think she's a lesbian.
She's a very tall, very broad woman. She's been my friend for years. I don't know. We just stuck it out. And now we're just I don't know. They just think we're just, I'm not gay and I'm not lesbian. I'm a mother, I'm a wife, I'm a daughter. Lesbian and gay, I'm not. Two titles I can't claim. I'm sorry. I just can't, you know?
So what do you do to like offset? You're going to be the exact opposite of what you want people to think of you.
Right.
So I'm going to be homophobic right now. You could date a man or you could be with a dog. Like, yeah. You're going to make comments like that, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean.
And she just like didn't know the language.
That part.
To like even express how she did and did not feel, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, thank you for saying that, because getting back to Robin, the fact that this woman lived most of her life without the language that we have in 2019 and 2020.
Mm.
So people using, I remember she had this interview where she was like, I guess what the young people are saying right now is pansexual.
It's funny. I said, based upon my experiences back when, I asked someone, from a sexual standpoint, what would I be if I was going to choose to label myself? I would be pansexual, they say. And that's someone that really goes with the feeling, their heart. And I'd say they had that right. Our young people have social media today where they really share themselves.
Right.
They're very open. If we came up that way, I'm sure we would have used it to our ability and creativity, all your ideas. We didn't have that.
Mm.
We didn't operate from that standpoint. We were raised differently.
Don't put your business out in the street.
Like the fact that she was coming to terms with the actual word pansexual and queer. And
yeah,
like she comes from an era where queer was not cool, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then again, just being so hard on her for the lack of verbiage.
Yeah, like the information that we have now about those kinds of topics, and like the fact that like we have the internet, if like you're too scared to talk about it with people within your peer group or family or whatever, at least like we have the internet now where you can try and learn about those sorts of things. Like they had nothing back then.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's the thing that kind of when I first watched that Whitney Can I Be Me documentary that blew my mind was I didn't hear those stories growing up. So when that piece of information was exposed to me after watching the documentary, it blew my mind that had I not seen this, like that part of her identity, like could have been completely erased and we would have not known.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like I was shocked that the Whitney documentary acknowledged it.
Yeah.
I think they were kind of forced into it because of the Can I Be Me documentary. But that one part of the documentary where it said absolutely queer.
Oh my God. When I saw that, shocked me too.
Like, I feel like I can speak for you. I gasped when I saw, I was like,
oh yeah. Yeah. Me too. I felt like I honestly audibly gasped more at that part than I did about the Dede Warwick revelation.
Oh, I was blinking during that whole scene. Like, I was like, oh, this came out of left field. What is going on?
Right. But the image of that back in the day, like, oh my goodness.
When the poster,
I don't know. It's just like different when you see footage of what she was seeing back then.
Yeah. Well, actually, there's one other scene that made me gasp harder.
Mm.
And that was the Whitey Houston.
Oh.
I said,
yes.
What did this dude do? What did he say about my Whitney Houston?
Yes.
Al Sharpton, he's out protesting with signs in front of the hotel saying Whitey Whitney.
At first she thought he was saying Whitney Houston. She couldn't connect it until, you know, it was really brought to attention. No, he's calling you Whitey.
Oh my gosh. And the fact that Al Sharpton was a civil rights leader.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, how could you? How could you?
And wasn't he like, I'm pretty sure he went to the funeral.
Yeah, listen.
So...
Let me not talk about that funeral, because the fact that R. Kelly was at that funeral
singing.
It's like a...
There's a lot going on there.
There's a lot going on. The fact that Bobby Brown couldn't even take a seat. Sylvia couldn't go. Sylvia Vahar banned from coming.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that Robin had to just bulldoze her way to a seat.
Horrific.
It's a lot.
That's what happens when Pat's in charge.
That family, that whole family is just trash. I just... can't emphasize that more. Oh, and I have a question for you.
Oh, yeah.
So there is that meme moment where Kim Burrell is singing to Whitney Houston.
Wait, are you talking about when they performed together or at the...
I want to say this was the BET Awards?
Yes. Whitney's still alive, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And it's that famous meme where she's like jumping up and like clapping.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yes. Okay, I know what you're talking about.
She's like in the brown dress.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. Which, side note, can you imagine being like a seat filler, just like Whitney Houston?
Man.
It'd be like, oh, right? Oh my God.
That would be amazing.
Oh my God. I feel like that'd be a lot to process.
Right. But how do you feel about, so Whitney Houston and Kim Burrell were obviously very good friends.
Mm-hmm.
But then Kim Burrell coming out, was it 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago? Extremely homophobic.
That's gospel singer Kim Burrell. Hours after the video is leaked online, Kim defends herself live on Facebook.
To every person that is dealing with the homosexual spirit that has it, I love you because God loves you, but God hates the sin in you and me. Anything that is against the nature of God, I'm called to do what God called me to do.
I feel like Whitney would not be Kim's girl anymore.
You think so?
I don't know. Like... I mean, I personally don't know too much about Kim Burrell other than like in relation to Whitney. How do you feel about that relationship?
Well, okay, so before Kim Burrell came out as super homophobic,
mm-hmm.
I used to look at that moment, that BET moment, and just be like, oh, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Because it was clear that Whitney Houston loved her.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm like, well, as it pertains to Kim, like, I'm sure you heard the rumors.
Mm.
Did that make you feel any different? Like, do you think, like, my question to Kim would be,
mm-hmm.
do you think she's in hell now? How does that work? Especially after Robin has come out. Like, do you hate her as much as you hate every other gay?
Mm.
Knowing this information now, or even if there was a slight chance that she could have did something back in the day, like, how do you justify Whitney Houston,
right,
versus your crazy homophobia, you know?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And I feel like that's kind of how probably a good majority of people who are like low-key homophobic feel about Whitney, you know, to a certain extent.
Yeah,
that they don't want to let go of that image. And I think that's why there's a lot of people, especially within the fan community, who don't want to acknowledge that aspect of her identity.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know, like, I mean, I don't know, Whitney's so, she's so complicated.
Yes, and I think that's why I love her so much.
Yeah, me too. She's a really interesting subject, and she's really like, she just like is so like real, you know?
Yes, and that's the part that makes her most interesting, is that she fought so hard to just be her, the can I be me, you know,
mm-hmm.
statement. She fought so hard to be her without being successful.
Right.
Completely. It's like, it's interesting and it's heartbreaking at the same time.
Do you think if she would have lived longer, like, let's say she was hypothetically still alive in like 2020, do you think like she would have come out or like spoken on that?
Oh, that's a good question.
Because I honestly don't even know.
I would say... I don't think so.
Yeah, I would. I'm leaning more towards that, too, because I feel like she's such a guarded person.
Yeah.
And I think that's really hard to unlearn that, despite whatever changes occurring culturally.
Yeah. And if she was still alive, I believe she would have made a comeback.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she'd be extra guarded about her reputation later in her life, to not be seen as just the crackhead.
Right.
So I doubt she would want to bring up those old rumors.
Mm-hmm.
And she hated talking about it then. I doubt she would want to talk about it now.
Yeah.
And Robin, if Whitney was alive, Robin wasn't going to say nothing.
Oh, no, 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 no. We would have not gotten...
Nothing.
She would have not come out with that book now. Mm-mm, no.
So, and I hate to say this. I think... All right, I'm going to say it.
Oh, no, just say it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're fine.
The silver lining, I think, with Whitney's death, I think is Robin.
Because she's finally able to come out and tell that story.
Yes, and because we ended up, for those who've read the book, we ended up knowing more about Whitney now that she's dead, than we would have probably when she was alive.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I completely agree. I've read so many fans saying, gosh, I wish Whitney wrote a book. Like, I wish Whitney wrote a memoir. Like, she would have not been honest in the memoir. Like...
Yeah, facts.
It would have been a very, like, calculated retelling of her story.
Yeah. Well, I feel if Bobby Brown told his side the way that he did.
Yeah.
While Whitney was alive.
Mm-hmm.
I think she would have been a lot more honest about that relationship. Well, okay, well, all right, I'm throwing a wrench in the whole situation. Had Whitney Houston been alive and Bobby Brown dropped his book and he said the exact same thing in his book, where if Robin had stayed in Whitney's life, that things would have been better, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe in that moment, she would have been honest about Robin.
Oh, really?
Probably, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, because at that point, Bobby Brown had already said it.
Mm.
That's her ex. That's her ex-husband.
Bobby Brown's surprising allegations about Whitney Houston's sexuality. Among the revelations in his memoir, Every Little Step, My Story, Brown claims Whitney was bisexual. In an interview with Us Magazine, he says that he knew of his late ex-wife's relationship with her best friend, Robin Crawford. Quote, "We were married for 14 years. There are some things we talk about that were personal to us." In the interview, he adds, "I'm a man and she was attracted to me." Whitney and Robin met as teenagers in New Jersey. Romance rumors swirled around the two for years. According to Bobby, those rumors were true all along. Quote, "I really feel that if Robin was accepted into Whitney's life, Whitney would still be alive today."
So do you think the linchpin was that? I don't know. I was going to say, do you think the linchpin would be that she needs someone else to say it before she does? But then at the same time, she was like being bombarded with that in the press.
Yeah, but nobody close to her was confirming it.
True.
You know what I'm saying?
That's true. That's a good point.
This is her ex-husband. This is her only husband.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he's saying, my wife told me that her and Robin were together. And that's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
I feel like she would have been honest. She probably would have reached out to Robin. And then we got to think about, too, Bobby Christina would still be alive. So she might have questions at that point.
Okay, also that part in the book, because it's been a while since like I read the book. Was it clear if Bobby Christina knew?
No, I don't think it was clear.
Yeah, because I'm like trying to think. Like, I don't know if she made that clear that...
I feel like Robin said she hoped that, or she believed that Whitney had said something about them. Because that's how deep their bond was.
Yeah.
It was never confirmed.
I don't know what or how much Whitney told her daughter about us. I don't know if she shared what life was like when we were inseparable before fame took everything over. I hope she told her how tight we were, that I would do anything for her mother. It haunts me that I have no way of knowing.
In my fairy tale land, I wish that Whitney had said something to Bobby Christina.
Yeah, me too.
You know, but that's my fairy tale world.
Because I would hope at least she could be honest with her own daughter, if anything.
Yeah. Yeah. But then again, Bobby Christina was young. Like, we forget. She was like, what, 21 when she passed?
Yeah, I think around that age, 20 or 21.
21-year-old female in the bathtub, face down.
On January 31st, 2015, just 2 days, he says, before his daughter was to head to L.A., she was found lifeless in a bathtub at her Georgia home.
She was found unresponsive.
She was rushed to the hospital yesterday.
Painfully reminiscent of her mother's death.
Reports label Bobby Christina's accident a mystery.
She was like in a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, a lot of the stuff that she talked about when they said, oh, they talked about my mom negatively, it was about the drugs.
Right. Yeah.
Right. She never brought up the gay rumors.
Mm-hmm.
But that could be because she's in a homophobic family.
That's true.
So
that's just like what will always irk me is that we'll never know.
Facts. That's very true.
That's what's just so sad.
Yeah.
Their like whole situation, I feel like there's even a part of me that kind of feels bad for Bobby Brown in the sense that had they hypothetically been living in a world where that wasn't looked down upon, where their relationship wasn't looked down upon and where they felt like they had to hide that, like he probably would have never gotten with Whitney. You know what I mean?
Facts. He might have had a longer career.
Yeah, like none of like all of like the residual mess that not only followed her, but that followed him. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. I just like think about how he got dragged into this too. Like, yeah. Not to say that he didn't do any like damage to her, because he clearly did. But like,
oh, yeah, for sure. Because, yeah, it's still a fuck Bobby Brown situation.
Yeah.
But yes, I totally understand. Like, a lot could have been different for him as well.
Yeah. And it's just like, that just goes to show that a lot could have been avoided had things just been so different. And it's just so sad.
If we look at the body count in this situation,
mm-hmm.
Whitney's no longer here. Nick Gordon's no longer here.
Bobby Christina.
Robin had to deal with what she had to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Joy's now being outed.
Yeah. Like, where is Joy? I want like the Joy op-ed.
Right?
Like, if Joy could like write like a short essay about what that was like, right? Being caught in between.
You know? So, I mean, there's just so much damage because of homophobia.
Yeah, that's another aspect of the story that just like really blew my mind. Like, wow, I cannot believe this many lives were messed up. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's so scary. It's just really scary to think.
One decision,
mm-hmm.
One decision had that big of a ripple effect on everything.
And like the thing I always go back to too is in the book, Robin specifically says that when Whitney presented her with the Bible, she specifically says the reason why they can't continue that relationship is because people aren't going to accept us and blah, 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 blah. So it makes me think like, okay, if they were hypothetically living in a world where that wasn't the case, would she have given the Bible to begin with? And I really don't think she would have given her that Bible.
No, not as a, like, a breakup.
Not as, like, yeah, not yeah, as, like, a breakup.
Yeah, yeah. I think she would have got a Bible somehow because, you know, Whitney was...
Yeah, very spiritual.
The way that Robin described Whitney's relationship with Jesus.
Yeah, like, talking to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's so cool.
Right.
We made ourselves comfortable, ate some Roy Rogers, and lit a joint that Nip had brought. She picked up a Bible and started reading under the low light, going straight to the sections about Jesus, covering every story that mentioned his name. She'd stop reading and say, "He's so cool, isn't he? I want to meet this man." Then she'd take another hit or two, maybe three or four, and pass the joint to me.
That was very, like, church camp, like Christian summer camp.
And you know what's so funny too is when in the book, when Robin was describing how like Whitney would get high while reading the Bible, I was like, oh wait, well like things never changed because Whitney also said she did that too as an adult.
Habits, my friend. Habits.
Yeah. Consistency.
Right?
Would you just sit in your room and do drugs?
Yeah, talk on the phone.
Watch TV.
Mm-hmm. Listen to gospel.
Mm-hmm.
I would still read my Bible, and mm-hmm. amazingly enough.
I mean, that should have been an indicator right there that Robin was telling the truth.
That part.
Yeah.
And really, there hasn't been, like, the family hasn't come out and said,
mm-hmm.
this is a lie.
Yeah.
Which is very important to note, because they've been vocal. They've been pretty vocal about a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they were like, oh, no, that wasn't it.
Yeah.
Because I had been waiting years for that bad boy. When she announced it like in February or April.
Yeah. And like, that cover came out.
Yes. I was like, oh, it's about to go down. Oh, you know.
And like the cover and the title of the book.
Yes.
In the early 80s, Robin was Whitney's romantic partner, something Robin has never spoken about until now. In her powerful new memoir, A Song for You, My Life with Whitney Houston, excerpted exclusively in this week's People, Robin is finally sharing her story and their love story.
And I thought she was going to be messy. I thought she was going to be messy, like in a very sophisticated way.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that it wasn't should say a lot.
Yeah.
And I just wish people would just give it a chance. Really.
Me too. That's the thing that I've heard consistently too, is whenever people who don't even know that much about like the situation, they haven't watched the documentaries or anything, but when they like even watch an interview with Robin, their minds change. Like they can immediately tell, like it's very evident that this is someone who cared.
Because she's very thoughtful. Like in every interview I've seen her in, she's extremely thoughtful about what comes out of her mouth. You saw it immediately on the Wendy Williams interview.
Oh, I thought she did such a great job.
Yes.
On that Wendy Williams interview, because you know Wendy was going to be messy, but Robin came prepared.
Yeah.
She held her own.
Right? She was like, we were about to jump you, girl. You are out here in these streets. We were about to come get you. Okay?
We're in the car. And you're like, you're talking like you live with us. Like you're roommates with us. We'd be in the car, we'd be sitting still, and Whitney would say, who is she? Who is this woman? I don't even know what she looks like. We were gonna go. We didn't know what you looked like.
Okay.
And our plan was to go down to Hudson Street and squat like Khalif, waiting for you, right outside the
house. Robin, I can't even fight. I would've run.
You know what?
Oh my gosh.
We weren't gonna fight. We just wanted to see you face to face and have a chat.
I'm frightened. Oh my gosh, I dodged that bullet.
It was a lot.
I was like, yes, Robin, you tell her. And like the fact that Robin told Wendy too, like, yeah, I listened to that interview and that was I think she said fed up.
Yeah, a fed up Wendy.
Yeah.
I've only talked to her once and that was on the radio. And that was that interview.
Whitney, Whitney, Whitney.
Wendy, Wendy, Wendy.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my Lord, have I waited for this day?
When's the last time you talked to Robin?
About a week ago.
Because I know that you and Robin were girlfriends from when you were growing up.
And we're still friends, girl.
Okay.
So when it's just you and Bobby Christina in the house, the three of you, who is part of the staff of your house who's always there as well, you know, besides
Jesus.
I know.
You want to be my friend? I like to be your friend, I think.
Well, you're so defensive. Is this how you treat your friends?
No, but you're not my friend.
You just said you want to be my friend.
That's what I want. See? I want to be your friend.
When can
I say I am your friend?
God, Whitney.
What, right, baby?
You are a real trip.
I've been around the world.
I heard that interview. I got a call from my former assistant. I wasn't working with Whitney. And, she said, Whitney's going to be on Wendy Williams. I said, what do you mean she's going to be on Wendy? Turn on the radio.
Uh-oh.
And that was a cumulative, fed-up Whitney Houston that I heard.
I was like, yeah, you stick up for your girl, Robin.
But I honestly think that didn't help her case, Robin's case, because she went on the Wendy Williams show first. That was her first interview.
Right.
And, oh, well, I think outside of the Today interview.
Mm-hmm.
And folks were like, why would she go to Wendy Williams? We knew, you know, Whitney fans know that her and Wendy were not cool like that, you know?
Right.
But I also think it was a perfect space to talk about it, too.
Me, too.
Because Wendy was talking so much shit about it.
And, like, Robin is someone who worked in the industry. She knows, like, how the optics looks. Like, she knows that if she goes to Wendy, that's gonna be seen by a lot of people. And that's where she can get her message, like, the first time, like, heard and seen by as many people as possible. Whereas if she went to, like, I don't know, random talk show host, no one's gonna watch that. But if they hear she's gonna be on Wendy, of course everyone's gonna tune into that.
Absolutely. And but there's one part that made me cringe. I mean, there was a lot of parts in that interview that made me cringe on Wendy's side. But when Robin was trying to talk about her first kiss, and then Wendy was like, nah, did you guys do it or not? Like,
Girl. Yeah, Wendy was just, like, trying to cut to the chase.
Yeah, I was like, let her speak. And this was, like, the first time we're hearing Robin really, like...
talk.
Get into... Yeah, I was just like, oh, my God.
We wanted to touch each other. And we did.
Yeah.
One night. And it was everything.
Oh, God.
And we knew then that everything was not all that would be.
Yeah, sex is only a part of her relationship.
Sex.
Yeah.
When she started doing her press, like in my head, I was honestly thinking like, oh my God, I don't really even know what she sounds like.
Right?
Like, she's never talked.
And her voice is so calming. It's like ASMR. Like,
yeah.
Yes, girl. It's like honey soothing over your body.
And like the energy that she emanates too is so different.
Yes.
From like Bobby or anybody who has ever talked about Whitney in that
she's
circle.
So centered. She's intentional.
Yeah, that's the word.
And I think that's what I respect about Robin. Especially when she was on the Red Table Talk.
Oh my God. Oh. That interview was such a journey.
Man, I'm gonna tell you, the end when
she brought up the wife?
Oh well, that part too. That part too.
Oh my gosh. No,
when Jada was like, if there was no cameras, if I wasn't here, and Whitney, I was.
Oh,
I
my God. Crying. Oh, my God. Like, too much.
If you had a chance that I could disappear right now and Whitney would take my place and all these cameras would shut off and it was just you and her in the room, what would you want to say to her?
I would want to say, you know, Nip, you know I love you. And I got you. I will represent. I love that girl like yesterday.
Yeah.
And she's with me all the time.
I understand.
I was like, no.
Oh my God. Like, okay, no. Well, first shocker was when she brought out the Bible.
Well, that part.
I was like, that Bible needs to be like in the future Whitney Houston Museum. Like,
right.
I'll start a GoFundMe for that. But I was just like, oh my God, that's the infamous Bible.
Right.
Joy has seen that Bible.
Right. Like, you saw some of the pages torn.
Like, yeah. I was like, Whitney left her mark.
Yeah. I was like, oh, she was really telling the truth. Okay. All right. Yeah. All right.
Oh my gosh. I was like, open the Bible. We want to see the vows.
I wanted to see the man. I was like screaming at the TV, like, turn to the vows, read them out.
I was like, Jada, open the book.
And she just like did this nonchalant flip. I was like, girl, worthless. Let's just like.
I was like, Jada, clearly you didn't get to that part in the book.
I was like, Jada, you have one job.
Yeah.
One job.
God damn it. And then, oh my God, that part too, when they started playing it, this is like one of my favorite Whitney performances, is Didn't We Almost Have It All?
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God. I was not expecting that. So when they started playing that in the interview, she's like, oh no.
Didn't we almost have it all? The night.
I'm not one of those fans that think Whitney's whole catalog is about Robin.
Oh, yeah. No.
There's four specific songs that I personally believe, like, Whitney was singing to Robin.
Which four are they?
Didn't We Almost Have It All? But in that particular performance.
Yeah, like, not on the record.
Not on the
in
record.
In that performance.
In that performance. Not any other performance, because she usually does that medley.
Right, with Where Do Broken Hearts
Have It All.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But that performance, particularly, A Song for You.
Yes.
And the Welcome Home Heroes version.
Yeah, because I honestly think, like, yeah, not the I Look to You album version. I don't know what the fuck that was. Even, I'm pretty sure even Robin said, I don't know what the fuck that was.
Yeah, she was like, that disco part, I don't know.
Yeah. Robin was like, yeah, I can't support that part of the song. That's when I hit skip.
Right? Exactly.
I remember the first time I heard that song and I was like driving in my car and I was like, oh, this is so nice, like so reflective and it fits like Whitney's like life. And then when I heard the dance beat start to creep in, I was like, oh no.
We're alone now and I'm singing a song to you.
Bro, It was absolutely gross. I think that was Clive's doing.
Yeah, but, me too. That felt like Clive Davis.
Yeah, it was all really over. Gross. Absolutely. So we have Didn't We Almost Have It All, A Song For You, mm-hmm. Run To You. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could really put it in the Bodyguard.
Yeah. The Bodyguard soundtrack.
Right.
I'm like, including Queen of the Night.
And then the one that really, truly breaks my heart, Like I Never Left.
Oh. Oh. Because that's the one she wrote too. Doesn't she have writing credit for that?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Did you ever wish you could get back something that you did in your past? If it wasn't for me, I know what we had was definitely gonna last. I admit that we say some things we don't mean when we're mad. But I realize that I've been foolish. I never should have turned my back.
When I hear that, and if you just go back and listen to lyrics, like truly listen to lyrics, mm-hmm. man, it breaks my heart. Those are before, for sure. I'm like, oh yeah, she's singing about Robin, for sure.
I ain't holding back no more. Your girl is coming home, and I want you to love me. Touch me
like I never left.
Come give me what I'm missing
like I never left.
Yeah.
You know what I also like, kind of like tangentially throw into, is there are some versions of You Give Good Love.
Oh.
And I think it's because Robin specifically wrote so much about You Give Good Love.
Yeah.
And when you think about, because Whitney was still like young at the time, like, yeah, she had gotten involved with Jermaine, but still, like, primarily it was still Robin.
Yeah.
I found out what I've been missing. Always on the run. I've been looking for someone. Now you're here like you've been before, and you know what I need. It took some time for me to see.
Just had it, but it's like escaping my mind, but I'll say it when it comes to me, because
it'll be random.
No, it's Home.
Oh, that's a good one.
At the Merv Griffin show.
Yeah, that's a good one. And you know what, there's part of me that thinks Dancing on the Smooth Edge.
Oh, bitch, that's like one of my favorite Whitney songs.
Yes. Oh, that's easily top four.
Oh yeah.
Best Whitney Houston songs. Her vocals were clear, but I think that's why Robin loves it so much.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, just maybe, she was singing it to her.
I was very surprised when Robin was asked, what's your favorite Whitney song? She said that.
Yeah, I thought it was a random.
I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Dancing on the Smooth Edge.
Absolutely.
I was like, the B-side?
Absolutely.
I was like, that's a deep cut.
A super deep cut.
She's a stan.
Yeah.
Yeah. She knows the material.
And that was the era of Whitney Houston in
I'm
between.
Your baby tonight.
Yeah, she was in between dudes, like kind of free, not free.
Mm-hmm.
That definitely could have felt Robin, for sure.
Yeah, that's a good one too. You got me dancing on the floor.
I want to say that I'm Your Baby Tonight is the era that I think she looks most gorgeous.
That is my favorite era. And I feel like it's such an underrated era.
It is.
I feel like you know a Whitney stan because they either stan I'm Your Baby Tonight or The Preacher's Wife.
I stan both, you know?
Yeah.
Because that era, the short hair was, giving me life.
And also, like, the way she was styled, she was, like, actually, like, her age. It was, like, age appropriate for her.
Yes.
Because, like, you know how, like, sometimes they styled her, she was, like, matronly?
Yes. As Robin said, yes.
Yes! Like, even Robin freaking knew when she picked Whitney up that one day in those jeans.
Yeah. And I feel like Whitney Houston, because the word sexy and Whitney Houston, they usually don't coexist with each other for some odd reason. But she was so damn sexy in The Bodyguard and in I'm Your Baby Tonight era.
Right.
Like, the fact that she was just wearing, like, the jeans and, like, her boobs.
The jeans had tears in them. Very important.
Oh, my God. And she would do her little dance. I'm like, girl, you are fine.
And the I'm Your Baby Tonight, she had, like, the leather jacket on, too.
Yeah.
And she was, like, on the motorcycle.
Oh, and even, like, Welcome Home Heroes.
Yes.
She was fine. Like, she was so sexy. Girl, yes.
Yeah, Robin must have, like, really been having the time of her life, like, during those eras.
I'm just saying, both of them, because Robin was fine, too. Like, girl.
That was, like, that was, like, peak them.
Right? They were just out here living their life, you know?
I feel like her I'm Your Baby Tonight era, like, that's when Whitney became a woman. She embraced being grown.
Yes, and her vocal styling improved.
Yeah.
It was just perfect. It was perfection.
And I feel like, too, like, as an album, yes, I'm Your Baby Tonight is kind of seen as, like, the pivot album in response to being booed at the Soul Train Awards and other things. But I feel like that's, like, where she artistically, like, that was kind of the artistic direction she really wanted to head towards. And that's why I feel like it's, like, most her.
It's her best album. Easily.
Right.
I used to not like the album. I'm going to be
super really?
Honest. Oh, my gosh. Because it sounds so 90s. And I used to hate, like, the New Jack Swing sound for the longest.
Mm-hmm.
But as my taste matured, going back and really reviewing her albums, I'm like, that by far her best.
Right.
I mean, the B-sides on that album are fire. Dancing on the Smooth Edge feels so good.
Right. Like, the songs that didn't make the album.
Absolutely.
Are really good, too.
Higher Love, you know.
Yes. And even, like, I'm trying to think, like, Feels So Good, Dancing on the Smooth Edge, Taking a Chance.
Yes. Lover for Life is that girl.
Oh, okay. Yes. So, really funny, when I was first becoming a stan, and that's what, for me, in my journey of becoming, like, a Whitney Houston stan, like, I mean, I'm part of the group of people, too, that's kind of like, oh, like, streaming is really, like, changing the music industry.
Yeah.
But one
yeah.
thing I will say is, like, I love how much access we have
yes.
to music, like, all of this music. And I was able to...
It's so easy.
Yeah, it was so easy. Like, a click away of just being able to go back and listen to all of the albums in chronological yeah. order. And I remember, like, driving in my car and, like, you know, I think... Is it, like, My Name Is Not Susan or I'm Your Baby... I think My Name Is Not Susan is the first song on that album. And I hadn't heard that one. I was like, okay, this is interesting. It's definitely different. And then I'm Your Baby Tonight, I know. All the Minute I Need, I know. But then once it got to, like, the songs on like the album, like Lover for Life, I remember being like, oh,
fire.
This is
straight fire.
Yeah. Even like something like I Belong to You.
Yeah, I was just about to say that song. I've been to the bottom, now I'm back on top. And I'm feeling the rhythm as we start to rock. When you get down to it, boy, you know I belong to you. Ooh, oh. You that one, Who Do You Love?
Is yes.
Probably top two favorite songs off that album.
Thank you, Luther Vandross.
Especially the live rendition.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Particularly from Welcome Home Heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, when she does that church breakdown in the middle.
Right.
I'm here for all of that.
I'm always here for a Whitney church breakdown. Like, honestly. Right? Like, take me there.
Right?
Speaking of run to you.
Go for it.
So we went on this like whole Whitney Robin tangent, but it was a necessary tangent.
For sure.
I was going to say, I think that's so interesting that you, because like you're not the only person who I've heard say that they now associate Robin with that, because I was doing some like research on YouTube and I didn't know this, but apparently the songwriter of Run to You is a gay man.
Okay. Hold up. The plot thickens.
The guy who wrote the song too, I'm forgetting his name. He said that he wrote that song about his romantic relationship with like a guy falling apart.
Shut up. I'm about to go listen to the song right after we're done again.
So I wrote it for Whitney, but it coincided with a 10-year breakup. So here's the story of how the song came to be. We had been breaking up and making up and breaking up and making up for quite a while. And finally we were in the car and I knew that was the last, this was it. So I dropped him off at his apartment in Hollywood. He had a stairwell that had a glass wall so I could watch him walking up his steps. And my knee-jerk reaction was to go after him. But instead, what I did was I pulled out a piece of paper and I put it on the steering wheel and I wrote, I want to run to you. I want to run to you. And that's how the song came about.
And you know, the songwriter had to have like had the conversation with her. Like, oh yeah, this is about, you know, such and such. And this is the feeling that I want, you know.
Mm. And apparently, too, Robin was in the studio that day, of course.
Of course.
When Whitney was recording.
I totally forget about that, man.
And the songwriter said he's one of those people, too, that was like, had Robin been there, Whitney would still be alive. Like, he literally said that.
Was this the interview where Old Girl was wearing that, like...
Oh, the jacket?
Yes.
With, like, all the different albums?
Yes, yes.
That's the guy. Yes, that's him.
I love Robin Crawford because she really was... Because I was there. If Robin was with Whitney, she'd still be alive.
Tell me why,
though. Because Robin protected her She cared about her so much. So I spent time with Robin. She was the classiest, nicest, sweetest, most caring. She didn't have, when they said in the, you know, in the movie, in the documentary, the brother said she was nothing. She was everything. But she cared about her that much and protected her. So I'm so glad she wrote the book. And she and everything she did with class, just like she, the way I knew her.
Yeah.
A nice, nice lady.
Oh, my heart. My heart. I was listening to Run to You on repeat while reading the last two chapters of Robin's book.
Really setting the tone.
Really setting the tone. Yeah, I made a mistake in doing that. That's why I was sobbing at the end, like, girl.
Yeah.
You know? But dang, that song, that's deep.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, oh my God.
Layers.
Like, you know, I Will Always Love You, that's such an obvious song to say, oh yeah, Whitney and Robin, and even like I Have Nothing, that's kind of a more obvious song. But I think it's so interesting that across the board of the fans that I've talked to, a lot of them say Run to You.
Yeah.
Is the song that hits differently after reading that book.
And even before reading too, there was just like, there was an attachment to that song. But yeah.
Yeah, because there was like a lore because she didn't perform that song so much.
Yes. And there was something about the way she sang it. It sounds different than any of the other Bodyguard songs.
Yeah, like there's like an emotional vulnerability she has on that song.
She's vulnerable. That is the key word. She's extra vulnerable in a way that we don't hear really, I want to say, in a lot of her catalog.
Yeah, because even like for like the ballads, we think of like, oh, she's so like the power that voice has.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is a vulnerability in her performance with Run to You specifically.
Yeah.
I don't know what what was going through her head that day.
Listen, she was picturing Robin through and through. And to get on some deep stuff, I feel like she was really picturing, I'm just projecting right now,
go ahead.
Like, maybe her escape.
Mm.
You know? Like, her imagining, I wish I could run to you in the way that I want to.
Yeah.
But I can't. I'm in a full-blown marriage right now. Yeah. You know?
I got a baby now.
I got a baby on the way. There's a lot to it. And I still think, even at that moment, as much as people were saying she was happy, I think in the back of her mind, she was probably like, Robin. Like, even looking at the wedding.
Oh my God.
Footage.
Oh, when Robin is fixing her veil.
Man, I wish there was a camera on the other side.
Yes, me too, bitch. Like, I'm so right there with you. I'm like, why was no one getting the other side? Like, why are we getting Bobby Brown crying and not what her face looks
like?
I don't
care about that. And again, like, with all those rumors, why didn't we get the two view of the faces?
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Like, even though we unfortunately never got Whitney's face and what she looked like in that moment, like, Robin's face says it all in that moment. It's so sad.
So heartbreaking.
I'm just like, oh girl.
When Jada talks about it.
Oh.
When Jada talks about it and you see Robin's reaction to her talking about it.
Yes. And this is like an older Robin too.
Yes. Like.
Fuck.
Heartbreaking.
Robin, when I saw you in that footage, my heart was just bleeding all in my lap.
I wanted Whitney to have the life that she wanted for herself, her own family. I did. I remember looking in her eyes when you're like face to face. And in my mind, she's about to cement her life with someone else.
Right.
You know? And I hoped that it would be fruitful for her.
I want to say Whitney and Robin's relationship, if I'm allowed to put these two words together.
Yeah, sure.
Beautifully tragic.
Mm-hmm.
It is so beautiful and yet so tragic in one breath.
Yes, absolutely. I agree.
And I mean, like, more so than, I feel when people talk about beautiful tragedies, they'll bring up like a Romeo and Juliet and stuff like that. But I feel it's like so deeper than that because it was real.
Yeah.
like going through the Rolodex of people that I've read about. But no, I can't think of anybody I've read about that was a real person that had a deep love to that magnitude where both people have said, I felt upon first meeting, I felt like I knew this person my whole life.
Oh my God. Okay. So like, I remember before Robin's book even came out when it was that little essay she wrote right after Whitney died. So I remember like after I watched Whitney, Can I Be Me? And then I read that, I was like, oh, that is, that's so interesting to read Robin describing that.
Walk me back to that moment. What was it about her that made you not only stop speaking and kind of lose all sense of your body in a way, but I think for me reading it on a molecular level, something about your body knew your life had just changed. Why do you think that was?
I didn't exactly know that my life had changed until I started spending time with her. But at that moment, there was something about her presence that I hadn't ever seen. There were a lot of people in that room.
Mm-hmm.
It was packed. She was sitting in the back in a chair, like sort of in the dark. And my job was, I was just passing out papers to people. And when I got to her, it was just this beautiful face, like a really simple beauty, but well put together. And she was just there. And for some reason, at that moment, I did not miss it. I felt everything that I was looking at. She was beautiful.
And then in the Whitney documentary, when we actually got audio of Whitney describing her first impression of meeting Robin, I was like, oh.
Yeah. Like, you get it. Yeah.
That's special.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was 16 and we were working at summer jobs. I remember thinking, wow, this is really going to be a trip this summer. I don't have any friends. And then here comes Robin with this beautiful, beautiful afro. She was tall and very statuesque, and I was like, wow, man. She stood up for me, and I remember thinking, I've known this person, it seems like, all my life.
Yeah, like, just, like, the way they describe each other. I just think it's so sad that we don't really have that much of Whitney talking about Robin.
Except, there's a lot of subliminals. So,
yes,
I started purchasing Whitney's albums on CD.
Oh my God, are you talking about like the liner notes?
Yes, girl.
See,
the liner notes, her acceptance speeches,
mm-hmm.
It tells a whole different story.
Once we were back in the car, she tightly squeezed my hand as if making sure I was still there. She wanted to reassure me that no matter what people were saying about me, about us, we were steady, that I was important to her and worthy. Her shout out to me on the liner notes for Whitney read, Robin, you are my friend, and you are also quite an assistant. Be strong, for you are a child of the Almighty God, and you walk in his love and in his light. I love you, Whitney.
Like, she loved her some Robin.
Yes.
Loved her some Robin, despite her family, despite Bobby. Loved her some Robin.
To my dear friend and executive assistant Robin Crawford, how do you thank someone for loyalty and devotion and love? Words cannot express. So I say to you, thank you, and I love you. Your vision has not gone overlooked.
I feel like also sad for Whitney, because as much as she wanted to show affection for Robin, she had to be very strategic in the way that she did it.
Man.
And even when you like look at pictures of the two of them, it's Whitney having to be the person to like physically show any like sort of affection, like whether it was like wrapping her arm around her or whatever. And like Robin's hands were just like kept to herself. It's just like, it's so sad. Like, I didn't even pick up on that until after I read the book. And that made me even sadder.
Yeah.
I was just like, fuck.
Sissy insisted that I no longer walk next to Whitney in public. I couldn't ride in the car with her or sit next to her at most award shows. You're playing right into their hands, I said, but they were unmoved. There were times when we both could feel the persistent chatter, and Whitney might hold my face in her hands and say, Robin, you know I love you immensely, while advising me to ignore her mother if she said anything mean or pushed me aside.
My favorite picture of Whitney and Robin, I think they were somewhere in Europe.
When she's like sitting and she like has her...
and Robin's in between her legs, and they're just chilling with their hats on, and I'm like, oh, this is the cutest thing ever.
Like, I bet you they didn't even know that their picture was being taken at that point.
Probably not. And they're just so cute. And they would have made a freaking phenomenally cute couple. Like,
yeah, like they could have been like a power couple, low key.
Because Robin was fine.
And also Robin, like professionally too, again, hearing from people who worked with Robin, she was on her shit.
Yeah.
Like she was the person that was able to keep Whitney together.
She was the person, yeah.
Some of the family might have been homophobic, but really it was about control. Robin was the only one that could get Whitney out of bed. She was the only one that Whitney would listen to. And anyone who had influence was a threat.
She was making freaking deals when Whitney couldn't afford her own tour outfit, so Robin had to be the one to deal with Dolce & Gabbana. Like,
yes.
That's a partner.
Absolutely. Robin got it.
Yes.
She got it.
She knew the role that she had to fulfill, and she was okay with that.
Yes.
In a way that Bobby Brown was never going to.
Right. And Bobby was coming from an ego place, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And
Robin, like you said, understood her role. Understood what she needed to be to make this dream work, because this is what they had been talking about since they were teenagers.
Yes.
You know? So
absolutely.
And then add the fact that that was her soulmate, add the fact that that was her twin flame, add the fact that that was her person. She was looking out for Whitney in a way that nobody else was going to look out for Whitney.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the dad comes in and was like, use the old tour clothes. She's going to be like, nope, I got my girl.
Yeah.
Let me go figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
Going to have to do an Oprah show, but let's go figure this out right now.
Right. I'm right there with you.
Soon after My Love Is Your Love was released, John Huston called a meeting in the conference room to discuss details for a world tour. I raised the issue of Whitney's wardrobe and was shocked when John responded that she'd have to wear old gear from past tours, as there was no money to purchase anything new. Instead of making her feel even worse by telling her there was no money for wardrobe, I said, you've always paid for your own clothing whenever we've toured. How about this time we find a designer who will agree to outfit you, the dancers, and the band? What do you say? Her reply, go for it.
I feel like Robin and Whitney were, like, I mean, like, you can argue a little bit in the beginning when they were getting involved with the drugs at a young age. Like, that wasn't the greatest, but
for sure, yeah.
It's just really sad that relationship wasn't able to flourish in the way that it should have. Even if, like, I've heard other people too say, well, it would have not lasted anyways. That's not the point.
Yeah.
The fact is, like, that relationship wasn't given a chance, period.
Period.
Whether it would have lasted or not, okay, that's something you can, like, keep theorizing about. But
yeah.
The fact that they couldn't openly let that flourish is so sad.
Absolutely. And imagine Whitney Houston being able to just be herself. Because I think that's what we have to keep looking at. Mm-hmm. It's not just Robin. That is the big picture of Whitney Houston being able to be herself. But she wasn't able to be herself artistically,
yes,
for the most part. Visually, those stories about her and her hair, her relationship to her hair, and the reason why we got a lot of those horrible wigs, you know.
Yeah.
No shade.
Yeah no, yeah,
but shade at the same time, like, because she was so sad and insecure about who she was.
Mm-hmm.
And people not accepting her unconditionally.
Mm-hmm.
That is the overarching theme. She just wanted to be loved,
right,
unconditionally. Like, I can't even imagine the music we would have gotten.
Yeah.
Had she been able to be her. I read somewhere an article, I can't remember where, but they said that Whitney Houston on her first record wanted to work with the producers or the members of Earth, Wind & Fire for her first album.
Mm.
I can't imagine the music we would have gotten with Whitney Houston and Earth, Wind & Fire.
Yeah.
Collabing.
Yeah, especially when she was that young.
Man. It would have been something like Eternal Love, which is one of my all-time favorite Whitney songs.
Oh, yeah.
Just, you know, that vibe of Eternal Love.
Mm-hmm.
It's very soulful.
Right.
In a way, I think, that she wanted to be.
Yeah, like, she took her time on that song.
Yes.
It isn't fair keeping us apart. And in return, I'm left with just my broken heart. I close my eyes. Close to me, I'm in your arms.
That's why for me, especially as a huge stan, why I appreciate the live versions of her songs so much is because she's like able to be more herself in a way that the record doesn't allow her to.
Yes. We could see it in How Will I Know, her renditions of How Will I Know.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, her live versions are just so her.
Yeah, and it's like so different too.
Yeah.
In like a really great way. Not to say that like, you know, the records are like shit. That's not what we're saying. But like, she's so unfiltered and raw and free when she's live because no one can control her when she's on stage. Like, I think a really great example of that is when she does Saving All My Love for You.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good one.
Be patient. Just wait a little, longer. That's just an old fantasy. Not a few minutes more.
The way she goes in on that song, like she takes her time with that song in a way that the record doesn't allow her to.
Yeah.
Because she has to stay, like, you know, on beat, on keep up with the melody. But man, when she does Saving All My Love for You live, like that's a completely different song.
And You Give Good Love.
Oh yeah, that's one of my, one of my favorites that she does live, period.
Is it the one in, I want to say it's in Japan, of course.
Everything good happened in Japan.
Right. I want to say, is that the song where she had, it was like almost like a reggae version, like towards the end. There was like a spin to it, a reggae spin to it. And it was only for a few bars and then it goes back to normal. And I was like, oh, yes, yes, let's do that. Let's keep doing that, Whitney. Can you give love to me? Never too much you will.
There's so many like facets of Whitney's life where it's like you could see her just like wanting to be free,
yeah,
but at the same time she just was never allowed to.
Yeah, and she was already a mega superstar, like, and we could have gotten more.
And when you think about too, like, had they encouraged Whitney, I don't know if like maybe she felt like she didn't need to write, like maybe she was convinced by the label, like, you're an artist that doesn't need to write their own songs. But had things been a bit different where they were encouraging her to be a bit more creative, even from like a business standpoint too, like she would have been making more money had she owned the rights to one of her songs. She has such a wealth of life experience to draw from.
Yeah.
Because she went through so much that, oh my goodness, I can't even imagine the kinds of songs she could have written.
I could argue, has she like helped write her songs or wrote her songs?
Yeah.
She would have been in the same tier that I hold Janet and Prince in terms of albums. Like, those are album artists.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like Whitney put together albums in the same way Michael did.
Yeah, because it's very like strategic and about commercial. They're about the numbers.
Absolutely. Whereas Janet and Prince, especially Janet, her albums are very thematic.
Mm-hmm.
They're put together in a completely different way than a Whitney record.
Right.
I wish she was able to have like the eras like that.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel actually more bad that Whitney wasn't able to do it than that like Michael wasn't able to do it, because like Michael was very clearly like, no, I'm about the bottom line. I want to sell records.
Yeah.
And like, that's okay too. But like, that's something that he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And you could even like argue that I feel like around history, he started to actually play more artistically.
Absolutely.
Than he did with the previous albums.
Yeah.
But with like Whitney, I don't think she was necessarily someone who was after like, I want to sell records.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? She was just someone who enjoyed singing.
Yes. And she wasn't granted the permission.
Yes.
To really be the artist that I think she wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, that's the sad part.
And I think there's like a subtext there of like, it was probably about control.
Yes.
Because they didn't want her controlling her image, let alone like, even like, again, like when you get into the financials of it, she would have been earning more money
yeah.
if she wrote her own songs. And that's like why that in turn pisses me off that none of her tour footage has been released, is that this is someone who was like literally, because of the way that her career was structured,
yeah,
she was like forced to tour so much yeah. in order to support herself.
Herself and the 18,000 people.
Yeah. Like, I bet you she doesn't even realize how much money she was making, let alone was spending to support these people.
Yeah, I mean, going back to Robin's book,
yeah,
the way that Robin was talking about Whitney's finances and the after the like second tour.
Oh my God, that she was broke.
The first time that I heard Whitney was out of money, meaning she had assets but no cash flow, was in 1987. We had toured the world for 11 months in a single year. I told Nip, if you want to know where your money is going and who's buying what or why, ask Cindy. Cindy Madnick, the bookkeeper at Nippy Inc., was a no-nonsense woman in her early 60s. If you wanted to know what was going on with the company financially, Cindy was your gal. When she did get in touch with Cindy, she quickly learned that she was paying for a number of family members' homes, car insurance, gas, and more. Nip even learned she was bankrolling one senior employee's condo, car, and living expenses. She also learned that her father had set up a Nippy Inc. account at the mobile station around the corner from the office, and a number of people were taking advantage of it. My mother makes enough money. Why am I paying for all her stuff? Nip fumed. And yet, no matter how much money Whitney generated with her record-breaking album sales, sold-out tours, successful movies, national and international endorsements, and private engagements, she needed to make even more to continue sustaining everything and everybody.
Didn't Robin talk about Whitney going to Clive or somebody to ask for $300 because she didn't have enough for the week or something like that? I was just like,
yeah,
this is crazy.
Up to this point, Whitney's management company had been sending her $300 a week. Money was tight. And Nip called Gene and asked him if he could increase her disbursement to $400. He told her no, which was surprising given that he cared about his talent and was accustomed to working with strong women, having promoted stars like Nina Simone. Of course, Whitney wasn't happy with the response, but she didn't stand up for herself. Instead, she went quiet. I pushed her to call him back for an answer, but she demurred, saying, I feel funny asking for something that's mine.
Yet the father was out on yachts and fancy cars. And
then when they also mentioned, too, that after her and Bobby started like dating, that Bobby Brown's mom would start using Whitney like an ATM machine.
Oh, man. It's just everybody was out for the money.
Yeah, it's so sad.
I don't know if Cindy was like this with everyone, but with me, she'd vent. She'd take my receipts and talk. This poor girl isn't going to have a dime left when you people are finished with her. Bobby's mother calls up here like we're an ATM machine. I need my cable, my electricity, my heat paid. She'd go on. I feel sorry for this girl. It's a shame. She works so hard, and at this rate, she won't have anything left for herself.
Which, that gets me upset too when fans come for Robin and was like, oh, she was just for the money. She was there just for the money.
Mm-mm.
It's like, no, we, it's everybody else, not Robin.
And like, the thing is too, if Robin really wanted to cash out, she had so many opportunities that she could have sold the story. She could have sold the story in the 2000s when she left.
Yeah.
She could have sold the story right after Whitney died, like everybody else did.
Yeah.
Or she could have like done the documentaries like everyone else did too and been paid very well.
Yeah.
Because she knows how valuable her story is. And also, like, the thing that I love about Robin being able to like write her own book is like there's ownership in her own narrative.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so like great about that Robin Crawford moment that we had.
Yeah.
Was this is someone who wasn't able, like literally was not able to take up space.
Right.
Because if she did, not only would she be compromising herself, but she would compromise like she would compromise Whitney too.
Yeah. And I don't want to say this lightly, but she could have gotten killed.
Oh, yeah.
Truly, literally, mm-hmm. gotten, like, the family was planning to kill that woman.
That's so messed up.
And I can't stress that enough when people talk about, oh, we should respect the family wishes and fought the family, fought that family, for sure.
Even in the documentary when the guy was like, oh yeah, we were just gonna scare her.
What? And then when Gary was like, yeah, you know, we had to rethink it because Whitney would have been mad.
Shortly before Bobby's arrest in Florida, the National Enquirer ran an alarming story told by Kevin Ammons, the ex-boyfriend of Whitney's former publicist. Ammons falsely identified himself as Whitney's one-time bodyguard and claimed that John Houston offered him $6,000 to break my kneecaps. He quoted John as telling him he should lay my legs on the curb and break them with a bat, and saying, I want her arms and her legs broke. During a television interview, Ammons claimed that John added, I don't want her murdered. That would devastate Whitney. Decades later, Gary admitted in an interview that they had just wanted to scare me.
We refrain from that because you never know what the outcome is going to be. And when you send people like that, you know, to do something, you just never know what's going to happen.
But I wonder if it ever crossed their minds that it was hurting Nippy, their sister, their daughter, the one providing for all of them.
No shit, Sherlock. Like, you were...
She would have been more than mad.
You were thinking about hurting, possibly killing a whole human being.
Mm-hmm.
But your cash flow was the issue.
Right.
Get out of here. Get out of here.
It's just so messed up.
I was very happy to hear Robin's side of the story in that sense, but also her personal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Hearing about her mom, hearing about her brother, hearing about, you know, her sister, her family, her father as well, her crazy ass father.
Right.
Just hearing all that extra and remembering and her reminding us, oh, she's a whole human being as well.
Mm-hmm.
She had a life. This affected her as well. Mm-hmm. You know,
mm-hmm.
Whitney's decisions affected her. Her decisions affected Whitney. This is how close they were.
Yeah. I like can't believe that Robin was going through all of Whitney's shit on top of all of her personal shit.
Man. And you know what broke my heart is when, so I read the book and then I listened to the audio as well.
Oh my God, me too. I read the book and then I listened to the audio.
Listen, when she got to talking about her mom.
And her voice started to crack.
Listen. Oh, I'm throwing stuff right now. Oh my gosh.
The doctor said, your mother has full-blown AIDS. I sat speechless, in a daze. My brother next to me, while the doctor explained the difference between HIV and AIDS. Marty and now Mommy. Late that night, I drove home crying and howling the entire way. I bet you could hear it for miles. Then I was ready to fight.
When she talked about her mom, I went and I randomly started listening to The Preacher's Wife.
Ooh.
And in the liner notes of The Preacher's Wife, Whitney like gives a shout out to her mom.
Oh, to Robin's mom?
Yes. My heart.
Oh my gosh.
My heart. And there was like a good section too. Like it was like a good, I want to say it was like a good two lines.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And it broke my heart.
Wow.
And I keep forgetting that Robin's family was like family to Whitney.
Yeah, that's another aspect of the book that I was just like, oh, wow. They really were part of each other's worlds.
Yeah. And so then I can only imagine how Whitney felt dealing with what she had going on, the drugs, then Robin's people dying years apart from each other.
Mm.
And then also on top of that, I know a lot of people don't talk about her miscarriages, but
yeah,
dealing with the miscarriages and like all of that stuff, like as much as I love Robin for telling her side of the story, it made me sit back and think, damn, what was Whitney going through?
Right.
What was her in like?
Yeah, my goodness. Like the overlap between the two of them, especially during that particular period of time, like they were just going through it.
Yeah. Which is why Whitney had did the AIDS event.
Yes. Mm-hmm. After reading about Robin's family and what they went through, it made me look at Whitney's choice to be more vocal about AIDS. I saw that in a completely different light.
Yeah.
I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
The singer, Whitney Houston, reportedly donated £20,000 towards the cost of the event, which covered expenses more than twice. The extra money will be used for extra publicity.
Sadly, there is a stigma associated with those afflicted with AIDS. Even as we speak, it is sweeping away our children, our families, our loved ones. Our world must continue through research to work toward finding a cure.
Oh my goodness, these girls.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, these girls. So sad.
I know, it is.
I don't even.
It absolutely
Yeah.
is.
One night at our first apartment, we lay side by side on the floor, our heads propped on pillows, the only light coming from the stereo we face. I selected The Temptations, A Song for You, an album I treasured, and then it started. The piano intro filled the darkness before Dennis Edwards' soulful voice emerged.
I've been so many places in my life and time. I've sung a lot of songs. I made some bad rhymes. I've acted out my life on stages with 10,000 people watching. But we all alone, yeah, and I'm singing this song for you.
The song ended, and we lay motionless until I spoke. I'd love to hear you sing that song. It's a great song, she agreed, but I haven't lived enough to sing it. Now she was 27, only 7 years older than when she declared herself too young. Why had she decided to sing it now? What had happened? What had changed? I watched from the sound booth as she perched on a stool and belted the song, her own interpretation, which sounded to me like a plea. I never heard her sing it live again.
We are alone, and I am singing this song for you. We were alone and I was singing this song. Oh, yeah. Singing this song. Remember me singing this song. To
an emotional ride this past like 4 weeks have been. Thus ends the Whitney Houston celebration on the podcast. You guys have to have known, we weren't just gonna take 1 week to cover Whitney. We decided to take 3 weeks to cover Whitney. So again, I hope you guys got a lot out of the past 4 episodes. Mariah was thrown in there at some point, but especially the Whitney-centric episodes, I hope you guys learned a lot. Now we're going to be going back to our regular programming where we talk about a diva movie each week. We have some exciting episodes coming up. New guest hosts coming in. Next week is actually going to be a solo week for me. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to find anyone to cover Evita with me, so that's going to be a solo episode. But yeah, next week we're going to be covering Madonna's Evita, and then we're going to have some new guest co-hosts coming along as well. If you want to follow the podcast, you can. Again, our socials are at Diva Dailies Pod on Twitter and Instagram. You can also call us 714-729-3121 to leave a voicemail. And you can email the podcast, divadailiespod@gmail.com. If you want to follow Angie, she was a fabulous guest co-host. You can follow her on Twitter. It's at PoetrySoul3. And yeah, Angie, if you're listening to this, I just want to say thank you so much for being an amazing guest co-host. You know, I was super nervous to like reach out to the internet for a guest co-host, and this was my first time ever really talking to Angie. And I think despite that, the episode came out great. Well, the three episodes we did together came out great. So Angie, you made this process really, really easy for me, and I think you were amazing on the pod, and I can't wait to have you back for another episode. Yeah, all right. Well, again, I hope you guys stay healthy and safe during this coronavirus pandemic that we're having. And yeah, if you guys also are now like really interested in learning more about Whitney, because there's so much surprisingly that we didn't really get to cover over the past like couple weeks, you can always personally DM me on Twitter or Instagram. I'm at INN_MHO. I can answer your questions there. All right. Well, I guess, oh my God, I'm kind of sad. This is it. It's going to be a while until we talk about Whitney again, because I don't want to front load these episodes with too much Whitney. But yeah, this is very bittersweet memories. Okay, I'm going to stop. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. And remember, divas.
So the thing is, a diva has to be good at what she does.